Support for the show comes from Mercury. Startups, you don't need to settle for cumbersome banking experiences to protect your money. Mercury offers banking and credit cards with an effortless experience, giving ambitious companies greater precision, control, and focus without compromising security. Open smarter checking and saving accounts, control spend, optimize cash flow, and close the books in record time. Visit Mercury.com to join more than 100,000 startups that trust Mercury with their finances and to help them perform at their highest level.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to the PropG Pod's Office Hours. This is the part of the show where we answer questions about business, big tech, entrepreneurship, and whatever else is on your mind. If you'd like to submit a question, please email a voice recording to officehours@propgmedia.com. Again, that's officehours@propgmedia.com. First question.
Hey, Prof. This is Anthony from Atlanta, now living in Italy. My question is about your 2024 predictions of Meta's growth through WhatsApp. Now living outside of the U.S. myself, I see that WhatsApp is used pretty much everywhere, and I love it. I use it every single day. But when I go back to the States, I notice that basically half the people don't even know what it is, and nobody uses it. In the U.S., we're still so tied to iMessage and just SMS. I wonder if the growth of WhatsApp is going to be limited, despite the fact that there's 3 billion users. Imagine most of that is outside of the U.S. Will that growth be limited to outside the U.S., or will Meta make a push to have WhatsApp grow within the U.S., which I hope so, because I love it, as long as they do it in a non-nefarious way. Love to hear your thoughts. Thank you. Happy New Year. Ciao from Italia.
Anthony from Atlanta, congratulations on the lifestyle arbitrage. I'm fascinated by this notion of arbitraging your quality of life. I invested with this guy who helped me buy some claims against bankrupt crypto platforms, specifically FTX. And he's a super intelligent, smart guy. And he moved his family to this small town in Italy. And he said, okay, imagine a really nice life for 60% off. And I'm just fascinated by that. And I think the two cities that are going to register the biggest lifestyle arbitrage are Mexico and Madrid. I think I'm meeting a lot of people that are moving to both those nations and with remote work. And it sounds like, I'm curious if that's what you've done in Italy. And Italy's economy has been so stagnant that it really hasn't had the same sort of price appreciation in real estate that some of the other nations have registered. Okay, back to WhatsApp. As a reminder, Meta acquired WhatsApp for $19 billion in 2014. I don't think we should be talking about whether or not it's a growth issue. I think the issue here is that it's not about growth, it's about monetization. With 3 billion people, you don't need growth. I mean, you've kind of got everybody. Effectively, the way I think of WhatsApp is it's the world's largest telco. And when you look at AT&T and Verizon trading at, I don't know, they trade at $70 or $100 billion, you think, okay, shouldn't this company be worth more? But what it needs to show is revenue growth. The head of WhatsApp, Will Cathcart, is that his name? Cathcart? I think of catheter. Anyways, by the way, my dad constantly tells me that whoever invented the catheter should get a Nobel Prize. And oh, also, speaking of my father, 93, he has a new friend, a guy named Max. Send me a picture. Never too old to make more friends as a dude, although it gets harder for us. That literally made my weekend. Anyways, he told the head of WhatsApp said, the goal is to make WhatsApp a household name. The conversation has moved from WhatsApp as the app I use outside the U.S. when I travel. It's becoming significantly more mainstream. And I agree with that. How has the app evolved? Features including channels let people follow status updates from influencers and stay on top of news from organizations, including the New York Times. Businesses now have access to paid tools to communicate with customers through the app. And WhatsApp also has one of the world's most used stories products called Status, which allows users to post temporary text, photo, and video updates. The amount of users continues to grow. Now more than 2 billion people use WhatsApp, up from 450 million when the app was acquired. Is it 3 billion or 2 billion? I don't know. I thought it was 3, but no, this says 2. Meta hasn't reported exactly how much revenue WhatsApp generates, but in their Q3 earnings report, they said the family of apps' other revenue was $293 million in Q3, up 53%. But still at $1.2 billion, that's just nowhere near what they get from Instagram and the core platform. And that was driven by revenue growth from their WhatsApp business platform. So I just think you're going to see I think they're going to figure out advertising and new features, and they're going to start charging for it. And there'll be an outcry from this vocal minority of people who want to keep WhatsApp free or get sick of the ads. But I would imagine the data and the GPS location, and if they implement AI and basically they find out that you're using WhatsApp on your way to Italy and they can start sending you ads for cool Italian hotels. And yeah, is it a violation of your privacy? But so what? People have voted with their activity, their time, and their wallets, and that is they're willing to give up a certain amount of their privacy in exchange for utility. And WhatsApp, I would argue as a function of utility to lack of monetization or lack of tax on you, that WhatsApp is the mattress in a box company that's giving you a $1,000 mattress for $300, or when Uber was letting you take an Escalade to the airport for $18 and it was costing them $100. WhatsApp right now, in my view, is the most under-monetized technology platform in the world, and they're going to start to bring that utility in line with its monetization, and I think this is going to be one of the most fastest-growing revenue lines in technology. WhatsApp is a juggernaut, largest telco in the world. It's not about growing the user base, it's about monetization. And I think they're about to turn on those jets. And Mark Zuckerberg is arguably, there is no one better in monetizing attention than Mark Zuckerberg. He is the attention wizard, if you will. Thanks for the question. Question number two.
Hi, Professor G. I heard your call to action for questions related to things besides career advice. So I have a question about home renovation. I've been in my home for about 7 years now. My husband and I bought it off foreclosure. It had holes in the ceiling and missing plumbing. We did a lot of that renovation work ourselves to fix those things, but the house still needs a lot of work. The kitchens and some of the bathrooms are over 20 years old, and the siding and the roof probably need to be redone within the next 5 to 10 years. We are, however, in one of the best areas for public school in the country, and the house is worth over $1 million probably, even in the state it's in. But I'm wondering whether it makes sense for us to put the money in to renovate this house or to move somewhere else that is already done, it's going to work better for our family.
Thanks for the question. I love this. I don't talk about this a lot, but one of my investment strategies, I just didn't know where to put my money last year. And or for a few years now, I've had such a run-up in tech stocks that I think I'm trying to be smarter. I'm trying to not be as concentrated in kind of eat my own cooking or take my own advice. And I'm trying to diversify. I'm at a point in my life where if I lose 90% of my net worth, which I have done twice before, because I was so over-invested in tech, because that's what I know, I just don't want to go back there. And I'm running out of time to make it back. So I'm trying to diversify. And one of the ways I'm diversifying, and also my second objective is I really want to enjoy my remaining time on this planet. I am 49, or 59, we're just going to say 49. Nancy Reagan here, Nancy Reagan. But I read obituaries. I'm a bit obsessed with death and macabre, but it is sort of a point of inspiration for me, realizing that I believe our time here is finite. So one of my investment strategies is I have been buying homes in really wonderful places. Specifically, and this is not great, but I think income inequality is only going to get worse around the world. As someone who studies economics and likes to think they understand trends and demographics, I think governments all over the world have been weaponized by rich people. Rich people have sort of run away with the amount of power they have. We were talking about Bill Ackman as an activist investor going after social issues and how rich people are now filling the void of government simply because lower taxes mean less power to governments and more power to people. But I just see it continuing to get worse. So what does that have to do with real estate? I have bought homes in London, Palm Beach, New York, and Aspen. Kind of what I call a 0.1% real estate strategy, because I think the crazy rich people are only going to get crazier and richer. But what I do is I buy homes that need to be renovated. And I take advantage of another flaw in our species, and that is these homes take, my home in Palm Beach took 3 years to renovate, and it takes capital. I have capital, and also I have patience. One of the best ways to build wealth for a family and a couple, if you have some capital, is to buy a place, fix it up, sell it, and because if you're married, you get up to $500,000, the first $500,000 in gains are tax-free, which is incredible as long as you own it for 2 years, and then wash, rinse, and repeat. So I'm doing what you do. I buy homes, I fix them up, and then I get to enjoy them for a little while, and then ideally I'm going to sell them. Generally what I have found is, it goes to specifically to your question, that you are better off staying and fixing it up and making it buyer ready, and then either selling it or staying there and enjoying it and enjoying your life, if you will. Why? Because $100,000 of well-spent renovation will usually get $150,000 to maybe even $200,000 in incremental value. And that is, there are a lot of people out there, people have more money than time right now across America, especially at a home that's $1 million. And that is, people would rather pay $100,000 or $200,000 more than do that shit themselves. They don't want to wait a year or 2 years to fix the plumbing. Typically, the best return on investment is investments in kitchen and bathrooms. But you should absolutely, unless I'm missing something here, maybe even take out a second if you need the money. Interest rates are starting to come down. And be on site. Actively manage, hire, and fire those contractors, and show up and ask why the tile and the seam on the soapstone on your kitchen counter isn't perfect. Be on site. Be all over your vendors. Price them out. There's nothing like an owner at the home managing vendors and service people to get good work at a good value, in my view. We have one quick break before our final question. Stay with us.
Support for Prop G comes from Mint Mobile. If you're tired of your pricey phone bill, you could make room for it by cutting out frivolous expenses, your lattes, your gym membership, your favorite streaming service. But that sounds terrible. Another probably better option is switching to a more affordable provider, like Mint Mobile. With Mint Mobile, you can get 3 months of premium wireless service for just $15 a month. That includes high-speed 5G data plus unlimited talk and text. And Mint Mobile has great rates whether you're buying for one or for a family. And their family plan starts at just 2 lines. You also don't need to get a new device. When you buy a new Mint Mobile plan, you can use your own phone and keep your phone number and contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/propg. That's mintmobile.com/propg. Cut your wireless bill up to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/propg. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Support for Prop G comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software, including Jira, Confluence, and Trello, help power the collaboration for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, or whether your team is around the corner or on another continent altogether, Atlassian software is built to help keep you all on the same page from start to finish. That way, every one of your teams, from engineering and IT to marketing, HR, and legal, can stay connected and moving together as one towards shared company-wide goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Support for the show comes from Grammarly. Sloppy writing can be the death knell to any potential client, investor, or employer. Emails and messages already lack the tone and subtle social cues you need to understand what the person actually means. But when grammar and spelling mistakes enter the picture, it can make it impossible to decipher what anyone's trying to say. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a trusted AI writing partner that saves your company from miscommunication and all the wasted time and money that goes with it. But it's more than just a grammar check. Grammarly can help generate AI prompts or even help you strike the right tone and personalize your writing based on audience and context. Here at the Prop G team, we use Grammarly, and all I have to say is it's made us more productive and made our work output just better, higher quality. Plus, Grammarly integrates seamlessly across 500,000 apps and websites. No cutting, no pasting, no context switching. Personalized on-brand writing help is built into your docs, messages, emails, everything. So why not join Grammarly to work faster, hit your goals while keeping your data secure? Learn more at Grammarly.com.
Welcome back. Question number 3.
Hey, Prof G. My name is Amir. I live in New Hampshire. I don't recall if you have any siblings. I think you've spoken about a sister once or twice, but my question is about the obligation of siblings to each other financially. You've been eloquent and open about your relationship with your mom and your dad, and your views on them are quite clear. What is your point of view about the obligation to look after your less fortunate siblings financially? My wife and I are both successful and financially secure, but have siblings who have not been as fortunate. We often feel torn in terms of having more versus our siblings. We do help them, but probably not to the extent that we could. Would love to hear how you think about this issue. Thanks. Big fan of the shows, all of them.
I love this question. People talk about sex now very openly. People talk about political rifts. They talk about mental illness. There are very few taboos anymore. One taboo, people don't talk about money. They don't talk about openly and honestly how much they have and how it's or don't have, how it's impacting their relationships, their marriage. And I think it's important to talk openly about money. This is a deeply personal question, and I think it's something that I don't think there is a right way. I think there's just got to be your way and what you and your wife feel comfortable with. My drive for money is all about women. When I was younger, I figured out that guys with money were able to attract a broader selection set of mates, and I wanted to be one of those people. I wanted to find someone more interesting and better looking than me, and that meant as a guy, you had to make money. And then the real motivation for making money and the requirement and the sacrifice required to make a lot of money was I wanted to take care of my mom. And I financially support my father, not because he doesn't have money, but he has such a weird relationship with money that the idea of him telling him he's now spending money on his assisted living facility would just freak him out so much. It would cause him so much stress and agita that it's easier for me just to pay for it. And my relationship with my sister is very successful financially. Her and her husband are successful. But on occasion, I have given, I don't want to say help them because they never ask and they don't need help, but I will do stuff for them that involves money. And I do it for me. I just find it so rewarding. It makes me feel strong. It makes me feel masculine. There's probably a power dynamic there, which is, I don't think I demand any. I don't think I use it for control. But I'm doing a lot of virtue signaling right now here. But I spoke to a former employee of mine that used to work with me at L2, and she's going through a lot, dying mother, new job, two kids, you know, typical sandwich generation that kind of falls to the woman who's both working, taking care of aging parents and kids. And she was just the star at this company at L2. And just in the middle of the conversation, I said, would it help if I gave you some money? And I know how crass and weird that sounds, but I find that money is nothing but the transfer of work and time to people. And what more wonderful thing to give to people you care about than work and time and money and make their life a little bit easier. So I'm blessed in that my sibling is really successful, so she's never needed money. But I like, on occasion, having the opportunity to give money. I think it's incredibly rewarding. And to have money and financial security in our society is to have people want to help your kids. It's to give you health care. It's to create more options for you. So to a certain extent, to have money in America is to be loved. So to a certain extent, if you can give money to people and help them, you know, you're sort of, I think it's sort of an expression of love, if you will. They say, don't lend money to friends or whatever. I think that's total bullshit. But just some best practices, or what I'll call my practices. I don't loan money. Actually, is that not true? A friend of mine just borrowed $1 million from me. That's not true. But this is to renovate a house. I'll get it back. He lent me $1 million about 10, 15 years ago. So it was just the right thing to do. In general, though, when my friends are not doing well or I have an opportunity, I don't loan it. I give it. I don't give them money that would have an impact on my life. None of this money, I assume I will never get it back. I don't want to resent them. I don't want them to feel, I don't want it to strain the relationship. So if you're in a position, and this is a position of privilege, but if you're in a position to help your siblings, what I would suggest is you come up with a reason to give them the money. You know, you can give away up to, I think it's $15,000 to $16,000 as a gift with no taxable ramifications to them. So to say to them, look, we've had a great year. Would it help if we gave you, and you could give up to, if there's four of you, $64,000, I believe, tax-free to them. What I would not do is start giving them money regularly because you don't want them to become dependent upon it. I'm not even saying do it for them. Do it for yourself. It feels just fucking awesome. Thanks for the question. That's all for this episode. Again, if you'd like to submit a question, please email a voice recording to officehours@propgmedia.com. This episode was produced by Caroline Chagrin. Jennifer Sanchez is our associate producer, and Drew Burrows is our technical director. Thank you for listening to the Prop G Pod from the Vox Media Podcast Network. We will catch you on Saturday for No Mercy, No Malice, as read by George Hahn, and on Monday with our weekly market show.